The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International.
Brent and Lydia. Oh wait, this is Lydia.
I'm Brent.
And we are bringing to you Starman episode 21. Do we have to mention Comics League International?
We should, because that's how they can find us on Facebook, and that's how they can find the show. Although if they found the show, they're listening to the show, so I don't, you know, stuff.
Okay, and this episode is brought to you by Comics League International. Okay, so is that done?
I think so, yeah. Thanks for listening, bye!
Oh, wait, what? Sorry, guys. We laugh a lot. I laugh a lot. Okay. So, Brent.
Yes!
What do we have today?
Well, today, we're still, of course, continuing the story of Jack Knight Starman, although Jack Knight is not in these episodes. We're taking a slight little detour into showcase issues, and that would be Showcase 95, number 12, and Showcase 96, numbers 4 and 5.
I see.
And these Go ahead.
I was just going to, like, you know, segue into, could you tell us more about the showcase episodes?
Yes, by earlier agreement, I will. Yeah, so Showcase, it was a line of comics. Now, this actually has a pretty, you know, long-running comic published by DC with the first volume of Showcase, actually starting in March or April of 1956.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So this was, what, that's almost 40 years before this, right?
Mm-hmm. And that volume, 56, it ran from like 56 to 1970. And what Showcase was often used for in DC Comics would be to either feature kind of like smaller characters. It's always been like an anthology book. And that would either be a couple of, you know, smaller characters in the comic, or maybe like one or two issues featuring a character. And this was usually done to see if readers actually liked a character. You know, they didn't want to launch a whole series without finding out if readers actually cared.
Right. Oh, that's very smart.
Yeah, and so this, it features some names that, you know, comics fans might recognize were launched in that volume of Showcase, such as Challengers of the Unknown, Adam Strange, Rip Hunter, the Sea Devils, the Metal Men in Fear 5, Creeper, Hawk and Dove. Probably the biggest characters that came out of it that almost everyone probably knows are the Hal Jordan version of Green Lantern.
Okay.
The Flash, the kind of the one that's on TV now, not the tin hat Flash, but the red suit, lightning bolts on his ears Flash. There was one more I was going to say. Did I forget him? Well, we'll stick with the Atom, the Silver Age Atom. So, yeah, it's often been used for this. And it got canceled and then kind of came back very briefly in the late 70s. But then again, in the 90s, it came back. Now, you see this one has, like, Showcase 95 and the other one has Showcase 96.
Right.
Restarted in 93. Kind of as a 12-issue limited series, again, with that anthology format, usually featuring two or three stories with different characters. And again, this featured kind of the minor characters, B-level characters of the comics world at that time. You know, I'm not sure if this was a test to see if they could hold their own series as it was originally, but it would be like characters that kind of were frequent guests of other big issues, but not there. So, like, for example, you know, Supergirl had an appearance in the 95 comic. I think this was right before she got relaunched into her own series again. And then in the 96, we have, like, the character The Guardian and Firebrand. You know, and to kind of give it away, the comics we're talking about now deal mostly with, it feels so weird to call him a minor character, although in the grand scheme of things he is, features the adventures of the Shade.
Yay! I love him.
Yeah, and that's a little brief history lesson of the Showcase, since, you know, we're going to be talking about those months later.
Yeah.
And with your love for the Shade, do you want to tell us a little bit about what's going on in the comics?
Of course, yes. So, sorry, you're gonna hear me sniffling because it's bloody cold.
You sure just not getting emotional about the events of the series?
No, let me think about whether I should. not this issue.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, this is like a. What do you call it, an omnibus of this issue, this showcase, this
an anthology.
Anthology, thank you. An anthology of three stories? Right?
Yeah.
Well, actually two, because the second one is split into part one and part two. So for the first part, it's called Incident in an Old Haunt, and I'm just going to, like, summarize the events. After killing a man, so it starts with, you know, okay, spoilers. After killing a man, the Shade meets a guy, and I don't know if I'm going to pronounce it right, Neron? Neron?
Sounds good to me.
Neron, okay. Okay, he meets this guy, so Neron, he looks very Scandinavian, who also has some form of power, and he very obviously thinks of himself as above the Shade, so he basically wants to employ the Shade, and he uses very very strong like he's lording over the Shade, that type of language, and of course in a very the Shade fashion, the Shade just scoffs at this and makes some very, very intelligent quips, and Neron promises that he'll be back for the Shade someday. And really, this part ends there. It ends with us realizing that the Shade, because we know the Shade from you know, the current Starman timeline, so we realize that he has changed over the years, and that he isn't quite a villain now. That's what I think this episode highlights. Right, and so the second part, the second story.
Well, why don't we go ahead and talk about the first story and then launch into the second one?
Oh, right, because we're gonna split it up today. Yes.
Yeah.
So let's hit pause here on the synopsis.
Synopsis, pause.
And dive into Incident in an Old Haunt.
Oh man, what do you think about this?
You know, it was so short, it didn't really last, like, it didn't really leave a lasting impression, but if I had to say, I was, because, you know, I love the Shade, I think it was illuminating, to learn of, like, the Shade's, to learn of the Shade's humanity, do you remember? Like, not that he's, I don't know if he's human right now, but it was very pronounced, I think, over here. Like his was quite defiant and very resistant to Neron's advances. So I really liked that. I don't even know if you can call it banter. Like, I like the conversation that he had with Neron very much. Yes.
Me too. I really liked this. It is short, but I think it does. It's a great fun of playing up with the character of the Shade. And you know, since we had that brief little segment a few issues ago when Dr. Phosphorus showed up, and they talked about how his powers had been all magicked up. And that was done by Neron. And so I thought this was a nice little moment of having, you know, the Shade interacting with that big bad villain. And you know, just great little moody piece of the Shade kind of outcooling, sounds like a weird way of saying it, but outcooling the, like, I'm the bad guy.
Right.
Thing. And him being like, yeah, whatever. I'm the Shade.
Yes. Yeah. I like that very much. You know, this was one of the, I think it was this issue. Was it this one, this story? Yeah. It was this part that made me really admire the way James Robinson uses words, which prompted me to tweet about it.
Oh yeah.
And he replied,
twenty-one episodes in, and we got a little like, hey, thanks guys, from James Robinson. And
yes. Yeah,
I'm feeling geeking out about it.
I know, right? Thank you, Brent, for introducing me to this literary genius, because, you know, I really wouldn't have read comic books if not for this podcast. And I don't know who out there is listening, but I don't know if you, I mean, if you have a penchant for podcasts and not comic books and have somehow wandered into our into our conversations here on Comics League International, I beseech you to start reading comics because there is a lot of undiscovered, I think. What do you call it? Literature in comics. It's often overlooked, I think. I mean, the way that James Robinson puts words together. Yeah. And I think why I like the Shade so much is because he writes the Shade really well. The timing, he's very consistent with his characters, and the timing and the delivery of the lines. And one of my favorites over here, you won't have context because then there'll be spoilers for later. But there was this one where Neron explained how he could be, he uses all these, like, all this, like, strong language, and he goes like, you dare refuse me? And and Shade just goes, to dare would imply that I feared you to begin with. And I was like, whoa, burn. Yeah, and the next one was Neron saying, you'll rue this day! And the Shade just goes, what if I had a rue for every time someone said that, I'd own Paris. Then, burn! Double burn!
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. it's a great little thing, and, you know, in a way, one of the reasons I like this is, I mean, it does kind of make me wonder how much of this is a slight little ribbing on the part of James Robinson to the kind of Underworld Unleashed storyline. You know, because, and the reason I wonder that is, I mean, here Neron is, and he's supposed to be like the big bad guy. but he's really here written as like kind of the over the top, you know, foaming at the mouth, like, I am powerful. And here we have the Shade just kind of being like, you're boring and a bore, you know?
Yeah.
And it just kind of makes me wonder if a little bit of that is just a touch of kind of, what would you call it, like meta commentary about James Robinson, you know, very tactfully, but kind of saying like, listen, I'm dealing with kind of real characters here. Don't necessarily want to shoehorn in your big bad into my comics. And I certainly don't want to say like he's being nasty about it, because, but definitely Shade comes out the victor of this exchange in pretty much every sense of the word.
Let's see.
He dominates the space. He dominates the conversation.
Nice of it, like, said out like that, because I really enjoy the characterization of the Shade so much. I think James Robinson is very good at writing these sort of like cool comebacks. You know, like this calm wit, you know, that Jack has as well, but in a more pop form. I don't know if you can, like, you know, the Shade is like this. The way he uses words are a little bit more. I don't know if pedantic is a good word, but it's more composed, and you know, he's been around for a long time. But Jack is always using these. Like, it's very speedy. It's very sharp. And it's very modern, the way Jack speaks, but it's the comebacks are very, like, they cut, and it's the same kind of edge that the Shade has, and I really do think that it's because James Robinson is the writer, he's there, and maybe in a way, because, you know, the Shade and Starman are on the same side as of now, they need to have some kind of commonality. I don't know. I just feel
the
that.
The Shade and Jack?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So I do feel like, even in the language, like now when the Shade is holding his own in these couple of stories, I think, you know, I do see a little bit of Jack in his in the dialogue. Yeah, so that's amazing. I really like that.
Yeah. So let's take a moment just to give we've name dropped James Robinson as the writer several times. The penciler and inker for this little tale is Wade Von Grobiger, you know, who's been our fairly regular inker on the main Starman series, and now we're seeing him as a penciler. The colorist, Debbie McKeever. The letterer, Chris Eliopoulos, although in the comic They leave out the R, so he just looks like Chis Eliopoulos. I'm pretty sure this is Chris Eliopoulos, who's a pretty well known letterer, and editor Chuck Kim, again who's usually our assistant editor over on the main Starman series. So a lot of familiar names here. You know, what do you think about the art?
I don't know, but for one thing, I noticed it felt a little bit different. I don't know whether that was just me.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's Grobiger, not Harris.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know what was different, but it felt different. I liked some of the, what do you call it, effects.
Yes.
Like the gooey drip. Am I making sense? Yeah, that was fun. And I don't know, I just felt a lot more pop. I don't know why I had that feeling, but you know, I'm really not very well versed in comic books, so I'm probably not making any sense. What about you? Can you try to make my statements more coherent?
You know, I think in this issue, we get to see some of Grobbinger's real strengths. Mm-hmm. And we also get to see some of the parts that, you know, he's still working out his system. Mm-hmm. I mean, to compare it to Tony Harris feels you know, like not the nicest thing to do, because I mean, Tony Harris is, this is what he does for a living. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Grobbinger is a very talented artist. And he makes some great strong choices. Like he's an excellent use of the kind of the atmosphere of everything. His layouts are incredibly clean and easy to understand. You know, he makes some great faces for the shade in here. The effects, like you mentioned, the kind of goopiness of the shadow magic is fantastic. It looks like living evil ink wherever it is. But there's something about his figures that, you know, I don't know if it's, they seem a little stiff in here. I mean, it doesn't look as, his shade always looks great. His Neron somehow just doesn't quite seem as lived in, if that makes sense. And I kind of wonder, is that him, his just kind of familiarity with doing the shade and kind of inking over Harris on the shade? Whereas Neron, it just, like, sometimes he looks very narrow, and sometimes he looks a little just kind of bulky, and he doesn't look as well practiced. Again, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's still really good stuff, but his strengths come into setting up the mood and setting up really just easy to read layouts, and of course, making really well use of the blacks. I never have any questions about what's going on here, but it's, you know.
I see. I mean, now that you've, you know, put it into words, I do get what you mean. In a way, whenever I read Starman, like the past Tony Harris issues, I do feel like I can imagine them moving. You know, like it's like a movie on paper, very much. But for this one, I felt like it was more like a storybook. The way that the characters move I don't know, their expressions.
Yeah.
It's like with that one shot, you know, like that frame is it's static. It's captured on paper. It doesn't move. That's what I felt.
Yeah.
When I read it, and that's beautiful in its own way, I think, because comics are still a static medium in a way, and it didn't bother me, and it didn't particularly stand out to me, you know, as I was reading it. So I guess I digested it in the same way, because, you know, movie on paper and storybook on paper, it's, as of now, it's the same to me.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. It doesn't have that sense of motion that we've been used to, and maybe that's kind of its biggest drawback. I kind of feel with our talking about what we got out of this issue, since, like you said, it is a fairly short issue, I'm not sure if we necessarily need to go through it page by page. I think we've kind of hit our big bullet points.
Yeah. I think so.
Do we want to just move on to the issues of Showcase 96, 4, and 5?
Okay. Why not?
Yay!
So, 96, 4, and 5 is the Day and Night, Night and Bright, right?
Yes.
Okay, so we're keeping it in the same podcast, are we?
Oh, yes. We're all together here, because right now we've only got about around 25 minutes a show, so we'll just throw this all together.
All right, hang on to your horses, guys. I'm going to do the synopsis.
Synopsis number 2.
Day and Night, Night and Bright. In this segment, we see the Shade journaling his story of how he met Dr. Fate, whom I have not heard of until... who I had not heard of until this issue. Yes. So we learn that the Shade escaped from two flashes, like the people flashes, only to have Dr. Fate appear before him, basically asking for the Shade's assistance to stop the recreation of the spell that created the Shade. So, okay, we have a lot of information being thrown at us. We understand that the Shade was made with a spell, and how the spell works, okay, it siphons off a portion of people's souls. Is it okay, Brent, if I explain the intricacies of the spell now, or do we wait
sure.
until...
Okay. Whatever you're happy with.
All right.
I trust you.
I trust you. Okay. The spell that created the Shade, it was once... when it was used to create the Shade, it required the souls of 104, I think, people. So all these people died to make the Shade. They might have been dead before. I'm not sure. But now, fast forward to the current timeline with Dr. Fate in the picture. The spell that's happening is rather than taking the souls of 100 other people at once and having, you know, people panic and why are these people dead, the mastermind of the current spell is taking a little portion of the souls of several thousand people through radio transmission. And this was this pretty much blew my mind. But and so it's like every broadcast would siphon off a little bit of their souls, so people don't notice they don't notice a little part of their soul dies. And okay, sidetrack. This blew my mind because I am a huge Harry Potter fan, and this is the reverse of a Horcrux. It's a reverse Horcrux. I'm like, ah. part two. So that was in part one, the spell and everything. So, and there are two parts to Day and Night, Night and Bright. So part two is about them meaning Dr. Fate and the Shade infiltrating some sort of radio station to prevent this spell from being broadcast, basically. So the mastermind behind this plan is some sort of the Shade's mortal enemy. His name is Culp. You know, in the beginning I didn't notice that was a name. I thought the Shade was saying Gulp, and I was like, why is the Shade gulping? But it's
Gulp. Yes. You're about to fight the bad guys. Oh.
Yeah.
I'm the Shade.
So, Culp, right? So Culp, we learned that he was also created via the spell, and we don't get to meet him. But we know that the Shade is bent on looking for him and capturing him. So at the end, we realize that Culp isn't at the radio station. But the Shade and Dr. Fate do manage to prevent the broadcast. And that's the end of part two.
Mm-hmm. You know, I love this story. I thought it was great.
Yes.
Just through and through, the words, the art. I'm thrilled to read this.
Me too.
I love how it started off with the kind of Silver Age of comics, Flash is fighting the Shade, and the Shade kind of being like, oh yeah, I was totally being hokey, and da-da-da-da. You know, just so happy with this two-parter.
I know, me too. Brent, question.
Yes.
What gets done first, the writing or the comics? I always thought it was the writing, but just thought I'd ask.
Well, it really depends on. There's a couple of well-known styles of writing. Mm-hmm. Usually, what will happen is the writer comes up with a story. Mm. Now, in some instances, the writers will actually, kind of just like a movie script, write everything down. You know, on page one, it needs to be two panels. The top panel is blah, blah, blah. The Shade in his library doing stuff with a quill. Blah, blah, blah. The bottom page, it's him and it's fighting and it's a robot. Blah, 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 blah. And everything can be very, very specifically laid out. That's one extreme. And some writers are well known for just insanely detailed scripts. And the artists are basically supposed to take those script, stay as faithful to it, and go with it.
Mm.
On the other end of the spectrum would be the art or the writer, sometimes with a collaboration with the writer, will come up with basically a plot synopsis. Okay, so the Shade, he's writing and he ends up fighting the Flash for a little bit, then he gets, you know, zapped out of there, gets introduced to Dr. Fate, and then they end up, you know, breaking into a building guarded by kind of beastmen soldiers. And that could be like as detailed as it is, and the artist would then take that rough outline, that rough synopsis, and kind of make the art for the story.
Okay.
How they feel it would flow the best. And then the writer on top of it would kind of just add in the words.
Mm.
Now, I'm pretty sure I've read that James Robinson does like an actual script, not like tightly detailed, but at least scripts out the writing, lets the artist use that script, and then if changes kind of need to be made or something like that, he'll kind of change the script afterwards.
So it's the writer has jurisdiction over how the comic is presented to the readers. Is that the panels and stuff like that?
I mean, honestly, that's one of those things that is really case by case. Because there have been some collaborations between artists and writers that, you know, once they kind of have that kind of respect for each other, a bond, the artist may take more just total control over how things presented. I've read scripts of writers who have been more detailed, but then just kind of in the margins written out like explicitly, this is how I see it in my head. Feel free to make any changes you want, and you always read about different comic book pairings of artist and writer that how they kind of deal with that relationship can either completely cement their relationship as a pair that works very well together or utterly rip it apart. I mean, there have been famous comic book pairings that it got to the point where they can't work together because the writer feels the artist is taking his vision and just destroying it and drawing whatever he wants. Or an artist will feel that the writer will not let the artist have any creative input into the design or flow of the story, where most artists are. I mean, a good artist is a good visual storyteller. To kind of say there's a hard rule is really hard.
I see. Okay. I get it. Because the only, you know, thing I could sort of like draw some sort of understanding from was, you know, how people write lyrics, like the composer and the lyricist. That was what I always imagined it to be, you know, and I knew that some people, they write lyrics on it, lyrics first, and then the composer fills in the music. But and for some people, it's like completely opposite.
That's probably an excellent way of thinking about it. Yeah.
Okay, but you know, lyrics are just they are very straightforward because it's just one thing and the other. So comic books, though, it's just totally I did not have a frame of reference. It's so complicated. I just can't imagine like all these people working on it.
Mm.
They have to really be a team.
And then sometimes, I mean, just to kind of throw another thing in there, sometimes you'll have a third person who all that person does will come up with the plot of the story.
Oh, and really?
Then, so you'll have one person who does the plot, one person who kind of does the art to follow that plot, then you might have a third person who comes in and does the script that kind of really marries the plot and the art together.
Okay, that's cool. Never heard of that before.
And then sometimes...
Oh, really? There's another sometimes.
You'll
okay.
have one person who goes out and does, like, very rough... You can have a person who just does the layouts, which will be kind of, here's the rough blueprints of how the story should be arranged. And then maybe you'll have another artist who goes over those rough layouts and maybe makes changes and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I mean, there's kind of, in the world of comics, there's almost as many variations of you can think of how a comic can go from idea to final form.
Wow. Okay. Nice tidbit. Thank you. Okay. Yeah. I hope you guys learned something.
And of course, if I'm wrong, feel free to send comments to Comics League International on Facebook. Yay.
Yes, but constructive ones only, please. No hate. We don't like hate here.
Hate's pretty bad.
Okay, so back to the main thing right here. We have Day and Night, Night and Bright, part one. So again... as per Starman, you know, we have the Shade journaling off. And he talks about his meeting, his origins, like how he began to be a slighter, lighter shade of gray.
I really
like that.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's because he met the two Flashes, right?
Yep.
Okay, well, this one I really didn't get because I don't know why there are two Flashes.
Short version, the guy with the silver hat was mostly active during the 40s and 50s, maybe a little earlier. The other guy, the one they called Barry, got introduced in the 60s, I think. My DC chronology isn't as strong as my Marvel chronology, I'll admit. In the previously mentioned Showcase, the anthology series. So basically, you know, you could kind of think of the guy with the silver hat, Jay Garrick, as kind of being the elder statesman of the Flashes. And of course, at the time of writing this comic, Barry Allen, the red-suited Flash, was dead.
Okay.
But he's back now, so.
Okay. I couldn't really... Okay, in the very first frame, the Shade talks about the heroes that he met. And there are two heroes mentioned, and both of them are dead. And after reading to the end, I'm really sorry, but I didn't really get who was whom. because when I saw the third speech bubble, the hero I met and fought alongside then is dead. So after reading the story, I thought that this one in the third speech bubble was Dr. Fate.
Yes.
Because he talks about the light, right?
Yes.
And then right at the end in the seventh speech bubble, he talks about encountering another hero, and then who now, alas, is also dead. Mm. I couldn't figure out who this was.
That was the Barry Allen Flash.
Oh, okay.
So the one it began was with the Barry Allen Flash, and Barry Allen was dead at the time of this writing. And like you said, so was Kent Nelson. And I know Kent Nelson came back. I think he's dead again. I can't remember.
Mm. Okay. I see. Got it. Mm. So, but in the first bit of the story, he is fighting against the Flash, right?
Yes.
Not together with him. That was what threw me off, I think.
Well, because I think the Shade started as kind of a Flash villain from those older comics.
Mm. I see. Mm. Oh, he encountered... I see. Okay, I got it now. Mm. All right. Okay, so I didn't know that the Flash started, the Shade started off as a Flash villain, or maybe I might have forgotten.
I think we've talked about him being just an old school villain that would kind of fallen into obscurity when these had started.
Mm. Yeah, I remember you telling me that he wasn't, like, very impressive when he first started out. Because, you know, he's my favorite character in Starman, really. And so to see him having, like, his own little spin-off like that, it really excites me. Okay. Shall we hit all the bullet points as well for this?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay. So, we see the Shade, I think he's being brought away in light, right? After his encounter with the two Flashes. Yeah, you know, I didn't realize this until I'm looking at it now, that was Dr. Fate behind the spiriting away.
Yeah. One thing I really like about this series, even kind of before the Dr. Fate thing, is just it's just a passing thing, but just how much kind of respect James Robinson does give to these older characters. Like the fact that he kind of talks about how Jay Garrick, he was more worried about Jay Garrick being involved because he was a little slower, but he was also wiser. And just, I don't know, I really like how the older, sometimes even sillier elements of comics still get kind of treated with respect. You know, I've been watching a lot of TV and stuff lately where it's very easy sometimes for people to take the sillier elements of comic and just kind of be like, that's stupid. And this is, you know, Robinson manages to pay homage to that stuff in a nicer manner. That's my own little tangent, sorry.
No problem. Oh, nice.
But then Fate shows up, and yay!
He's bright!
Oh, man, can I... Oh, please, I've been talking a lot. Let's have you talk a little bit, because otherwise I'll just gush.
No, I was just going to tell our listeners the Japanese word for bright, because... Because that scene, there's this scene what page is this? I've lost track of the pages,
Showcase 22?
Showcase, do you call it Showcase 22? Yeah, 21, actually. Oh. With the last, there are like three panels that the Shade is in the dark, and then suddenly there's a bright light. And, you know, Japanese people, or rather, even me, because I speak Japanese, and we're very reactionary, I think. So when something happens, we vocalize it for Japanese speakers, I feel. So when the light comes on, we will very automatically say things like, oh, maboshi! That was like, maboshi is it means like, oh, it's bright. And the thing is, you wouldn't say that in English. You wouldn't like have a light turn on and, oh, it's bright. No one says that. But, you know, I do it a lot. I do it a lot in Japanese. I don't know why I vocalize it so much. I know why, because, you know, Japanese people vocalize it, and we are schooled to pick up the language in a native way, and that's what they do, so that's what we do. And I don't know why there needs to be an emotional release. I like it, though, but it just strikes me as interesting because, like, when the light shines over here, the shade doesn't say anything.
It's like, let me shield my eyes.
So I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, right. Oh. Very, very intercultural here. Yeah. Okay, that's me rambling.
No, I like it. See, the only reason I'm holding back is because I feel like if I start rambling about what that makes me think of, because it'd be like, yeah, it's weird that apparently the high context language is the one that also often states the obvious. You know? It's cold. Yes, it is cold. It's snowing. It's cold. Stop it. Okay. That's not high context. That's lower than low context, you jerk. So Day and Night, Night and Bright was written by James Robinson. The colorist was Melissa Edwards. The letterer with the R in his name in this issue is Chris Iliopoulos. And editor Chuck Kim. And I saved art by Matt Smith for last because I know he's done some of the like a fill-in issue of Starman, but oh man, his art in these two halves, I love it. There's something ugly about it in a perfect way.
You know, I get what you mean when you say ugly. It's not defined, right? The features and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like, you know, instead of eyes, they have, like, black patches.
And it everything just feels, like, thick and heavy and, you know, but it just, it works so well. I think it's fantastic. I would love to read, like, reading this issue makes me want a Matt Smith Dr. Fate comic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it just looks great.
Cool. Maybe your wish will come true someday.
Knock on wood.
Should tweet Matt Smith, son.
Yeah. Good job, Matt Smith.
Yeah, good job. Okay, so the shade is like being captured.
Yeah.
In a way, by Dr. Fate, and from some angles he looks eerily like a caped flying Jason Voorhees. You know, we have quite a few close-ups of the mask.
Yeah.
Mask, but
the helmet of Naboo.
Oh, right. That's the name. Yes. No, Egyptian magic, right?
Oh, yeah. Doesn't it look Egyptian?
It didn't occur to me to even try to think about that. I just took it as it was. But I was very impressed in a way because the way that they didn't make magic silly.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, comic books to me, it's very science fiction. It's very, it's still very, it can be supernatural, but it's not, you know, how, to me, the difference between supernatural elements and magic is that with many things about magic, you can't explain. You can't explain them in a logical way. But for supernatural elements, there's a sort of science to it. You can logic your way out of the strange. And But for this one, I like that magic is a, you know, it's one of those things that like you can't really reverse it. Like, you know, the shade is the shade, and Dr. Fate is powerful because he has magic. There's no like weak point, or you know, we can remove your spell. It's not like that. It's magic. That's what it. That's yeah. why they are here. And so, yeah, I think that's very. It's a nice device, plot device. So I really enjoyed the way it was employed over here. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like it too. I like it. I like it when magic isn't just a it's magic, it can do everything, but where it feels like magic is, I don't want to say like science, but where there is that kind of, you know, it is a tool, and like any tools, you have to learn how to use it. Mm. And I think that's something I like about this story. And I like the fact that they give a good reason for why the Fate needs shade. It's like, you know, the way my magic works and your powers work, it's difficult for my magic to have a strong effect on your shadows or the shadow matter. You know, admittedly, when he starts talking about like even the Spectre would have a hard time with you, it's like, well, the Spectre in the DC comic is supposed to be kind of the living embodiment of the god's wrath, so I think if we're talking about something on that power scale, I don't know if but then I just put aside my kind of nerdiness. I was like, just go, you know, that kind of a small thing. Just kind of nod your head and say, like, I don't buy it, but I don't need to find it right now.
Okay. You know. Oh, I didn't know that about the Spectre. Thank you.
Yeah. So.
Okay. So we have, there's a lot of, like, Egyptian paraphernalia where they are right now, so... Mm. I'm guessing this is like Dr. Fate's lair.
Yes.
And they together they go to find that radio station, and I think over here the Shade he agrees to help Dr. Fate because of Culp. You know, he gets promised Culp. And also because I think, don't you see the juxtaposition of the way Dr. Fate approaches the Shade and how Neron approached the Shade? Do you see that? I don't know if
now that you point it out, yeah, but continue that thought.
Right? It's like Neron, I mean, the fact that it's in the same book, Neron was like, you shall bow down to me. And Neron wasn't, I don't know, it doesn't seem like he was that powerful as Dr. Fate. But then Dr. Fate comes and he was like, no, you will help me because I need your help and I'm not going to harm you and stuff like that. And he talked to the Shade like he was a human. I think that there was like that parallel. I don't know.
No, I think, like I said, it did not jump out at me. But now that you say it, it's like, wow, That's actually kind of obvious. Wow, good job. Ring the bell. Yay. No, but yeah, I like that.
Right? Because the way the Shade has how he reacted to these two people who want his power is very different. You know, over here right now he's very willing.
And do you think now that's got me thinking of, we're also kind of exploring very similar themes in these two bits in a way of, one, you know, with the Neron, arguably the Shade is in the process of giving up villainy. I wouldn't quite call him heroic in the main Starman stuff, but you know, he's kind of put aside his his own kind of, I'm going to just go rob stuff. In this comic, he is a villain almost for the sport of it, but it's kind of, since this is set in the past, it's he's also being asked to take up the mantle of a hero. So it's kind of, in both stories, we have an outside force asking the Shade to go with something that might not be in his expressed nature at that time.
I think that's exactly what it is right now, because also maybe it's also a cause and effect kind of thing, like Neron, he seems like not a very nice person. No. And having someone talk to you like that, and you know, basically being in the process of wanting to, so to speak, turn over a new leaf, and then you know, having the right people pop up at the right time to offer you different opportunities, I think it might have worked for the Shade like that. I don't know.
And I think we also have to mention, with the right reward.
Right, that's true.
We kind of touched on it briefly, like Neron doesn't really have anything to offer the Shade that the Shade doesn't feel he already has. Here, you know, I mean, if Culp weren't involved, and if the Fate was like, hey, I need your help to go fight some evil, would the Shade have been as motivated if it weren't for that, like, by the way, the guy you hate is also there, and Fate basically saying, and if he's there, you get to do with him as you will.
Which is
a lovely little amoral line, in a way, for Shade to, or for Fate to kind of be like, you know, if you feel like butchering Culp is the way to go, I'm not gonna stop you.
I think that's a really great parallel to Shade saying, so what, are you going to make my shadows more shadowy, or something like that, right?
And
to Neron, and then over here he's very like, oh yeah, you have Culp, you're dangling Culp in front of me, I will take that carrot, you know, it's what's happening. And yeah, that's great. That's exactly why the story moves forward. I think that's what it is. So, one thing that's not exactly entirely related to our conversation, on page 26, the last box, there's like this oddly shaped, this inverted C there.
Yeah.
I thought it was like really interesting, because like the art, I don't know, it appears again in the other opposing page, but now it's a normal C.
Right, it's the, you know, I kind of take that as them going through a portal, and we see it, and if you notice, like, the Shade and Fate, their positions are flipped.
Right.
So we're looking at it from behind in one area, and from the front of the other way.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow. I see.
Yeah.
Okay. So, one thing, like you said, how the Matt Smith, he drew the art a little bit ugly, right? I really think this is one of those things that I don't know if ugly is the word, simple maybe, but like a shape like this to bridge that gap of understanding, you know, that like a reader looking at the thing and okay, this is a portal.
I mean, if we just look at those two pages, it's, we get our first half of the portal, we get that on the next page, that top panel has nothing, and then we have them coming through, and it's a simple but very revealing way of doing the teleportation.
If I'm not wrong, it's called photoportation. I hang out on like Supernatural Wiki a lot because so you know teleportation has like different forms apparently, and the ones that like you when you travel by light, there's it's called photoportation, mm-hmm. and when you travel by shadows, it's I think it's called umbragoportation or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, who comes up with these things? And then I'm like, these people, and I point to the comic. But yeah, you know, reading up on superpowers is also really interesting.
Yeah.
The science on its own. So I just was fascinated by the fact that there's, you know, photoportation and this like, well, let's just call it shadow portation. Mm. Like they're side by side right now. It's amazing. it's like there's. Oh, but it does make sense that Dr. Fate is somehow stronger than the Shade because, you know, it's always a thing. It's how darkness is actually the absence of light.
Mm,
so, you know, my husband is a physicist, so these principles are pretty much, you know, it's thrown around the house a lot, and I'm serious. It's not. It's really not. It's not a thing that I'm making up. It just get.
I believe it. I believe it.
Yes. So yeah, it makes sense why light trumps darkness in a way over here. Power. When we talk about power, the strength of it. Yeah. So okay. Anyway. Let's go on to the next bullet point.
Yep. Well, basically, they you know they come in and this ends with that great splash page cliffhanger of Owlman.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, slightly, I saw this picture and my first thought was Nazis. With you know the emblems on the arm and that rigid posture. And I don't know, the way the suits just kind of hung there, it just made me think Nazis. Maybe I'm alone. I don't know.
I see. Oh, I didn't pick that up. But okay.
Yeah. And then when we kind of move on, we get that little recap and then back into the thick of things with Fate fighting and throughout the second half, since they've kind of talked about how it being a the magic absorbing the soul energy rather than killing 104 people to get the shadowy stuff was, you know, using the radio waves. So we get kind of the running commentary or running radio show.
Yes. Took me a while to figure out what it was, but it was very cool. What do you think?
I liked it. I kind of wonder if there could have been more to a point of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I think there's strengths and weaknesses to what it was there, because it starts off very much in the. Like, let's get this straight. It isn't even an American bike, where it kind of feels. You know, like, oh, is this trying to, you know, play on the fears of people? And then the next, really, on the next page, it's movie trivia, in a way. And then, what I think in the next time we see it, it at some point it gets to domestic violence. And then to just really random topics. To people asking for advice about what's happening if people want to use the guy's garage for things, to someone contemplating suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of makes me think, like, with so many topics going around for, I guess, what could be an advice show in a way, but it also just feels disjointed.
Mm.
It reads well, and each topic is interesting, but at the same time, it doesn't feel... I feel like if they had maybe used that segment to have a point, it could have been stronger. But then again, maybe that is the point of, yeah, well, this is just whoever's listening.
But, right. I actually took it on the pretty much the underbelly of what you just said, because I read it as noise, and I felt very distracted by it, and I thought that was the effect that they wanted to do, to mm-hmm. to pay, to, like, you know, it's something that, it's one of those comic book things that, you know, I keep encountering, because I'm so new to comics, and I really marveled at this because of, this is DC, but I really marveled at this because because it's one of those things that you can only do in comic books. You can't really do this in another medium, because it's going to be too much noise. It's going to create too much dissonance. Mm, but over here, because you have these chunks of text that your eyes just rove over, and you're like, hey, there's so much to read, but they all don't connect to the story, and you realize that this sense of irritation that these bubbles, you know, stir up in you, that's the thing, that's what it's supposed to be. I was like, whoa. I've never, you know, that's what I felt about it.
That works too.
I mean, yeah, because, okay, as a I write fan fiction very much, but I really like to experiment with different things, like, you know, non-chronological narratives, and just being, just instead of not only just creating a universe or, you know, inciting feelings in my readers, but also to create an atmosphere, you know, when you are reading.
Yeah.
So I think that this is what happened with the speech bubbles for me, with those callers for me. Yeah, it wasn't just like in the universe, but the way I felt, you know, in while I was reading. That's what I sorry, I'm aeroplane somewhere.
No, I mean, and like I said, I get where you're coming from, and you know, I certainly am not gonna go on, well, you're wrong and I'm right, but you know, all I can say is, for me, I thought it was interesting, and I thought like all the stuff was working, but it didn't feel like it was used to the strength that it could have been. And I mean, you never know, honestly. It could be just, either my reading of the story or something like that. And I know we're just going, we're blowing this little discussion of this little point way too long. But sorry, it was kind of like also that thing of, you know, during a fight scene, this is supposed to be happening really quickly. And it sounds like this is going through one radio broadcast. So part of my thinking, they're missing the moment of kind of showing, of taking a stand of, like, what type of radio program in specific are they talking about, to also just the idea of, like, these are a lot of different topics, and something that's probably taking, all told, about, you know, 10 minutes. So it could just be, like, a little bit of me drawing a line in the sand over stuff that really shouldn't bother me. But, you know, I mean, it did not overall hurt the issue to me.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just took it as a comic book thing, so. Like, whoa, this comic book's making me really irritated. That's probably what it said. Wow, that's amazing. It's good writing there.
I like it.
Okay. All right. So we have Dr. Fate and the Shade, like, killing all the bad guys. Mm. Now, do they kill them? I don't know. They run away, though, the bad guys.
you know, it's, I don't think fate would kill bad guys necessarily.
Okay.
Shade, we've seen,
yeah,
has had no problems with it. So whether or not he's just injuring them because he's with fate, or whether or not he's like, you know what, these are beast men, creepy things, they're fair game to kill, who knows?
Mm.
I like that we kind of get the setup here. Well, Culp's not involved, but once we kind of get to the chamber, it also seems that Culp has been double-crossing the group as well. Kind of like, yeah, we're just going to let the shadow energy build up and then let it destroy everything. Because there's nothing there to harness the negative.
Okay.
I like that.
Right. So we don't, just to confirm, we don't see Culp at all, right?
No.
He's not here, right?
I don't think so, because they've mentioned Culp basically got things set up. He began the Shadow Rite and then he departed. And the Shadow Rite started like a couple of days ago.
I see. Yeah. So, Dr. Fate, he casts a spell of containment, right? To subdue the Shadow Rite. Do you say subdue the Shadow Rite? I'm not sure, but basically he uses it to fix things. And he waits for the right moment.
Yes.
And I don't know for sure, but the Beastmen, they seem to look like humans again. I don't know, the picture is a little too rough for me to decipher, but
Looks like some of them are humans and some of them are beasts.
Oh, really? Okay.
I think so, because there's some that are definitely human. I'm going with the ones that, if they have that, like the points on the side of their head.
I figure
those are the Beastmen, where if they don't, they're human.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense now. Okay, makes more sense. Got it. Alright, so, the end?
Yeah. I also, I guess before the end, and after the fate fills it, I like the fact that Fate apologizes for he's like, hey, I thought you'd be able to get him, and he's like, oh, don't worry about it. You know, like just that little acknowledgement there. I liked it.
We have forever. Again, decent person, Dr. Fate versus scum Neron. I think that's a very clear line, parallel, and also I do like, you know, going back to that part where the Shade is journaling about how Dr. Fate influenced him. I do see how there is a shade of Dr. Fate in the Shade in Jax. Shade, you know, the current hour timeline of Shade. Yeah, like that touch of humanity. So I liked that.
I liked it too. I mean, overall, these two, three stories, depending on how you slice them, I just really enjoyed both of them.
Yeah,
you know,
me too.
And yeah, I'm happy.
Yeah. No complaints, really. It's, I mean, Starman is great, don't get us wrong, but I think Showcase was a really nice spin-off for Starman, and I really liked that. It was about the Shade, but more so because it wasn't just an origin story, you know, it was about... this guy, Dr. Fate, and how a person shapes a person, and you know, and there was this bit as well that I really was very impressed by. James Robinson was that part, that those words, what was it, the that was about morality or something. All right, So Neuron says, despite this is way back in incident on a haunt, in an old haunt. Neuron says, to do good is still an overriding emotion of mankind. And the shade replies with, I don't know if I agree, though I think there's possibly a desire not to do bad. You know, discussions like these, I think it's amazing that they happen in comic books. Right? It's a very almost theological take on things. Yeah. So I like how there's this discussion because it's really a question that many people try to address. Yeah, so wonderful, really. I liked it. I like this anthology a lot.
Yay!
Mm.
And, you know, next issue, our next episode, we're going to be continuing with Starman, the regular series, number 20. And that, oh man, it links to one of my favorite characters, the Golden Age Sandman.
Okay.
And so I'm really looking forward to our next four issues, our next four shows, to kind of see what you think about those.
Yeah.
Where can they find you on the internets?
They can find me on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.
Yay!
And perhaps YouTube in a while. I haven't been there.
One day soon again.
One day soon again, yes. My username is Q-U-E-K, Quick Channel. Quick is my surname. And, yeah, it's the same on all the places. How about you, Brent?
Well, they're gonna need to memorize a couple of places to find me. First, you can find just this show on Facebook with Comics League International. Of course, please subscribe through iTunes and tell your friends if you're enjoying this. There is also on Twitter, you can follow me at Dead Troubadour. And then my main page is deadlytroubadour.com. Feel free to go to my author page on Facebook, which is Brent Thomas. And you know what? If you're doing all those things and if you're enjoying the show, if you can take a moment to go to patreon.com/Brent Thomas, and you know, why don't you just go ahead and put like a dollar in the tip jar. Help me cover some costs of keeping this show up, keeping the data flowing on the website, all that other stuff. You know, I'm just saying, if you feel the need, I would appreciate it.
Yay, please do.
Yay. So I guess until next time.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow it, 'cause he knows it's all worthwhile. It's only let the children lose it, let the children use it, let all the children boogie.